It feels like with chronic illness, it's absolutely shaped the way that I work, but it's constant reimagining. It's every next level, there is a different threshold and a different invitation to engage with our bodies and engage with the world.
Welcome back to the Pajama Interviews. I'm your host, Michelle Irving, and I am so excited that we're going to speak with Armina about so many things, particularly in relationship to confidence in your career while living with chronic illness. Armina's a holistic business and career coach. She's a proud immigrant and chronic illness advocate. She's partnered with progressive companies, including Google, Deloitte, Snap, and she's the Entrepreneur Magazine's expert in resonance. So stay tuned at the end for this week's exciting announcement. And now let's dive in. Welcome to you, Armina.
Thank you, Michelle, so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you today. And this is right in my wheelhouse as well. I know you and I are going to have the best conversation.
I'm so excited. And I want to just let everybody know, we found each other across the oceans, both through LinkedIn and through Instagram. And there is something about, if you live with chronic illness, even if you're trying to work out how to have your executive career, there is a whole community of women that if you just make a little reach out to us, we will respond to you, because we absolutely understand that this is a big deal for navigating career and chronic illness. We get it. We have lots of resources together, but we're also just happy to be there in the moment with you and say, we see you, we're with you, and we're here with you together.
The beautiful reminder. It's so true.
It is. So that's how we found each other. I'm wondering, the first thing I'm curious about, would you mind sharing with us just, you know, your own diagnosis or process in which you're living with your own condition and what that means for you in terms of having to work out work?
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question. So I have celiac disease and Hashimoto's. And a few years ago, I also had mold poisoning and it caused a brain injury. And so I was originally diagnosed with my two chronic illnesses, celiac disease and Hashimoto's, when I was in my 20s. And so I was working really hard and I didn't have any boundaries and I was deeply codependent and was taking care of everybody but myself. And I worked so hard that I burned out and I eventually was diagnosed with these two autoimmune diseases. And it really rocked my world initially, because I actually had gotten so sick, and I'm sure so many people that are joining the summit have had a similar moment where I got so sick and my doctor called me and told me that I was days away from multiple organ failure because these conditions were so unmanaged. And basically I had to choose, like, do you keep going the way that you're going, which is killing you, or do you choose another way? And in that moment, I had to choose another way. And so I had to leave my current job, find something that was a little bit healthier, do so much internal work to actually think about my relationship to ambition and work very differently now, being someone who has two chronic illnesses. And so I had the privilege of reimagining my work. I left the company that I founded. I went inside of a corporation for a while, and then I went on to found my coaching. And inside of my coaching, part of the body of work that I teach is helping people design their work around their authentic energy, because we all have different bodies and brains, especially those of us that are navigating chronic illness and conditions and disabilities. And so we want to ask ourselves, you know, when does our brain work best? When do we need to rest? When do we do our best collaborative work, and really designing our work around that? And it was interesting because I thought I had it all figured out. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I had mold poisoning and it impacted my brain. And all of a sudden I had way less energy than I was used to having. Even as somebody with Hashimoto's, whose energy dips seasonally, all of a sudden I had way less and my brain was functioning differently and I had to reimagine again. And so it feels like with chronic illness, it's absolutely shaped the way that I work, but it's constant reimagining. It's every next level, there is a different threshold and a different invitation to engage with our bodies and engage with the world. Do you feel like that's true for you too?
Absolutely. And I think the way I think about it is I call it our circle of wellness. So it's not our illness, it's our circle of wellness, which expands and contracts a little. And then we just want to know, are we an expanded energy, or is our circle of wellness today a little more defined? And that works on all levels, exactly what you're talking about. Like, what is it physically? What is it emotionally? What is it mentally? And I also put in this creatively, financially, and even spiritually. What do I have the energy to do in this space? And I'm really curious if we can follow this thread with you, that you are obviously working in a company that you founded, and then through the chronic illness, you went into corporate, whereas a lot of us go the opposite way. So I'm wondering, when you were going to corporate, could you share with us what your sort of non-negotiables were, or what you were thinking about in taking a corporate job, and then what your tips were for even going into interviews and that in that process?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. No one really ever asks that question because they're usually so focused on like the diagnosis and the fallout, but that's such a beautiful question. So what I was looking for initially was a form of stability, because entrepreneurship, I believe, requires a level of resiliency. And there are moments in our lives where we have that resiliency, and then there are moments where we don't. And I didn't feel like I had it at that point because I was so sick. And so I needed something that was a little bit more stable and had a bit more of a pattern to it. And also, I wanted the really good insurance, right? The insurance that I would get through corporate was way better than what I was getting myself through entrepreneurship. And so there was just stability, and eventually got to the point where that stability didn't serve me. And it started to feel like I'd reached a threshold and it was time to move on. But in that moment, that was somewhat of a crisis moment, I needed that reliability.
And so in terms of that reliability, how did you go about disclosure? Like, did you share anything coming in? Were you very clear about, okay, if I'm going to take this job, these are the hours, these are the conditions, this is what I will do? Because what you talked about in the previous role was that boundaries was something that were a bit fluid for you. So going into corporate seems to be like a lot of people experience the boundaries are constantly pushed against. So what did you do for yourself in those roles around boundaries?
Such a beautiful question. Again, I'm loving all of these questions. So, you know, at that point, I didn't actually have amazing boundaries, and I was newer to my diagnoses. And so I was newer to advocating for myself. But what I was really interested in was the wellness space, because basically, after I'd gotten my diagnosis, I had been supported by all of these functional medicine doctors and practitioners and wellness coaches. And I had gone back to actually study a couple of things myself. I actually went to nutrition school, and I got a meditation certification and was studying all these modalities. And so I was really falling in love with the wellness space, because it was a space that brought me back to life in so many ways. And so I thought, if I'm going to take a job in corporate, let it be in the wellness industry. So I chose a company that actually had fluency and understanding about the conversation around illness and wellness. And so that was sort of baked in already, but I still had to advocate for myself. But I didn't do it from the onset. I actually, at that point, this was almost 12 years ago now, I didn't know that I could at that point. It was, you know, I was still newer to the journey, like a little bit earlier in my career. But once I was onboarded, and I actually had a really awesome manager, and I had really honest conversations with her about my chronic illness and what was possible for me. And she was really wonderful and supportive. And, you know, there were times where I was still learning my own boundaries and definitely pushed myself too far. And she was very helpful in helping me identify those boundaries where I was over revving versus what she was asking from me.
I think this is really important to talk about, because one of the things I know is that most people with a chronic illness process, we push through, because we're trying to not only get the work done, but we're trying to not be seen to be not as efficient or not as performing, and we're worried about our career. And I always say that the number one thing you can tell if somebody is, even if they're working part-time, but they're doing the extra hours on the Friday, or they're on the weekend, or you're getting emails at different times, and you see that they're overperforming in their role, if they have a chronic illness condition on one level, that's a sign that they're about to resign, usually, because it's unsustainable behavior. And that in itself, the pushing through is the sign. It's not necessarily a sign that they're getting well. It's often a sign that the chronic illness is taking over the all of the energy. And so it's great that she was able to see this in you, and she had that wisdom to literally mentor you into your own boundary.
Yep. She would actually say, she'd be like, I saw that you sent these emails really late last night. And I know sometimes we have to do that, but we don't want to make a habit out of it. Like, she was very good about inviting me into a different conversation and trying to set a different standard.
Yeah. And now, because you're in the whole coaching and career business, and you will have this wisdom that comes from chronic illness, what would be your top three boundary tips for people now navigating corporate while living with chronic illness?
So the first thing I would invite you to do, and I do this with my clients, is I would make a must-haves, a deal breakers, and a nice-to-have list. So the reason that we do this is because we want to be really clear on what it is that we need to thrive. If we don't know, we'll never know it when we meet it in an interview. So what are your must-haves? What do you absolutely need to do to be able to show up and shine, to take care of yourself, to put your body first? What are your deal breakers? What are the things that as soon as you see them, you know that you're not going to continue down the path of interviewing because that is just a hard no for you? And then I think it's really important to do the nice-to-haves, because oftentimes what happens in the interview process is oftentimes we want to just take the shiny object that's in front of us. So we conflate the nice to haves with the must haves. So it's really great to know that this would be like a cherry on top, but this isn't the thing that I'm going to take the job for. So we hold ourselves in integrity. We hold ourselves accountable for what is true for us and what would be a nice to have.
I was curious about that's in the interview process. And I think that also is once, if you're in an experience with the chronic illness and you're in a flare or you're taking some leave and returning, these things change. There's a shift in the process in this. And I'm 100% with you. If you know what your things are, that makes it easier. And then there's something about, okay, I've got my things, but there's always that little bit of gap in your confidence and the conversation. And so when I think about this, I always think of this is what is the healthiest and best for me, which means it's best for my colleagues and it's best for the workplace, because this is how I show up optimally. And I don't have to apologize for this. I can stand what I think of as my sacred ground, because I am bringing all of my talents, all of my brilliance, all of my resources, all of my creativity, all of that is coming to collaborate with everybody in this job. A company doesn't own those skills of mine. I share them with the company. And I know this is really your hood about designing as well, what works for you in work and in business. So I'm curious what you think about that sort of approach, and also anything that you would add to this conversation around that.
Yeah, I really love what you said, because I firmly believe this too. Like, even in my own business now, truly what is best for me will be best for you and vice versa, right? Because if I'm making a decision that allows me to show up and shine and in my highest and best, it's going to support you and vice versa. So yes. And I think one of the biggest things too, particularly around the confidence conversation, is shifting any shame or apologeticness that we have around our illness, disability, et cetera, right? Because so much of the conversation in the zeitgeist, particularly for people with chronic illness and disability, is that there's a deficiency for us. It's absolutely not the truth, right? That's been the conversation, but it is not the truth. So in my journey, I have felt deeply apologetic or ashamed about needing certain accommodations or needing more rest. But that's just how my body operates, right? It doesn't make me wrong. It doesn't make anybody else right or better than me. So I think first and foremost, from a mindset perspective, shifting any shame or stories that we have around our chronic illness making us less than, it does not. You know, what's really important is that on teams, we have diversity of thought, diversity of lived experience, all kinds of diversity. And our lived experience as people navigating chronic illness is so rich and profound. And we bring something to the table that somebody else could not bring to the table. And so I think first and foremost, a reframe around that is one of the most powerful things that we can do for ourselves. I also am fully obsessed with Brittany Packnett Cunningham has a TED talk on confidence. And she says that confidence needs permission to exist. Community is the safest place to try it on. And then we use curiosity to affirm it and follow it. And I think that's so powerful because we do need to hear from people like, hey, you know, permission to exist and permission to feel like you are powerful and wonderful and whole as you are, and there is nothing wrong. And then in communities like this one, like the one that you're building, and other communities like this, this is where we get to practice and try it on for size. And then we continue to follow curiosity around it. And so, yes, I think shifting the shame and any sort of apologeticness that we have behind it, and then practicing the confidence. And confidence is like a muscle that we build over time. And so every action that we take helps us build the strength in that confidence.
100%. And I love that you're bringing up that it's great to practice and it's great to have a place to have the conversation first. And that's certainly the work that both you and I do, is creating the spaces for that. The other thing that I always ask people to just have a little look at, particularly around work, is what is your story of work? So what ancestral beliefs, family patterns, what are the thoughts in your head about work? The number one thing we most have in our story of work, and I frame it as that because it's a story, like it's something that we're told. It looks like a fact, but it's a story. Yeah. And the number one thing we're told is work hard. And working hard, it's like, well, why wouldn't we look to work with ease and find the most easeful way for our bodies and for the work to be done? And working hard is what drains our energy out of us and means that we don't have all of our capacity to bring to the actual task. And so even if you just get a focus on, you've got a story of working hard, which makes things hard work, that has a huge impact mentally, emotionally, and physically on you.
The story piece is so powerful, right? Because we all have these different lineages and the meaning that we make from it, and then it impacts how we show up. And that was my story too. I had a lineage of working hard. And if you're not working until you're exhausted, are you really working? And I did that until I got sick. And then I was like, oh, okay, this doesn't work. There's got to be a different way. There's got to be ease here. So I love that you offer that. So beautiful.
Yeah. And I think it's just a starting point, because what you'll find then is a lot of other stories. And when we get a visual really literally in ourselves of, okay, this is the logic that I'm operating on. Work hard, work to your exhaustion. Where does that logic go? Like if it actually follows premise, conclusion, where do I end up? And where does the organization end up with that? And that's why there's such a thing as burnout, when in fact we can find ways where we can hold the boundary and work with what is easeful. And it's not about, you know, the stereotypes of lazy. It's like what I understand for me, what is easeful. And this is a perfect example for simplicity. We are currently having this conversation and it's all held within a recording of a summit. That's the Career and Chronic Illness Summit. It's also the case that I want this information to be shared throughout the podcast. But the most easeful way for me to do that is to have a platform where I can take the audio from this and then load it very simply, and the platform does it for me. I'm not interested in trying to work out, okay, I want to have a podcast. What's the most complicated way to have a whole lot of widgets to put them in a website to send it out? Mm. And it seems like a really sort of almost a little bit silly conversation to have, but I'm outlining it for everybody because whatever the task you're in, what is the most easeful way for that task to get done, and break it down, look for the support, the resource, something that will make it more easeful for you. Spend your time there so that you're not doing it the hardest way.
Yes, because some of us love to do it the hardest way. And it just drains all of our resources, and then we don't have spoons for other things. So look for the ease. I love that invitation.
Yeah. So I'm curious for you then, in this whole process, and if we can stick with sort of, you had some obviously fantastic mentoring for you in the corporate space. And then I'm wondering, as you gained more confidence, because you did the inner work for confidence, what does that look like to you? What does the inner work look like? What does that mean? Because we use this term a lot, but I also think, what do we all mean when we say we do the inner work?
That's a really profound question. And I think it can go so many different ways. For me, the inner work has been such a journey. And it's almost like every piece of work then leads to a new insight that often leads to another piece of work. So my inner work has looked like when I first was diagnosed, I went to coaching because a lot of things in my life didn't feel good. So work didn't feel good. I was newly diagnosed with these illnesses. Some of my relationships were challenging. And so I wanted to understand how I was showing up. I wanted to know what my traits were. And that was like the one of the first steps for me. So I was like, oh, okay, I understand some of my traits. I understand some of the positive ones. I understand where I sabotage and I understand where I'm not showing up so positively. And that level of insight was really powerful. And then I got really interested in shadow work. So shadow work, for those who may not know, it's from Carl Jung. And it's the idea that we all have quote unquote dark sides of our personality that we relegate to the shadows. And I was fascinated by this concept. And then that opened a whole thing for me of like, wow, I have all these traits that I'm pretending that I don't have and I've relegated them to the shadows. So that really opened up some integration work. And I think that that probably for me is probably the root of inner work. Inner work to me feels like integrating all the parts of ourselves that we've fractured or hidden, and we're bringing them all together. And it doesn't happen overnight. And I think it's the journey of a lifetime. And I think sometimes we're like, can I just be done with it? Or is this enough work? I think we're constantly becoming, and the inner work is always evolving with every new challenge and every new opportunity. And so those are just some ways that I've done the inner work. Even sitting with myself in meditation every day, I think is a part of the inner work. It can take so many shapes, but I'm curious how you think about it.
Yeah, I think for me, having a guide is essential, particularly when you start out. And I also want to be really clear and clean with everybody. Like, I always have a coach or a mentor because I need somebody outside of my head. My head's pretty good, but I need somebody outside of it to help illuminate the parts and the places and give me tools and wisdom that they have learned to make it more easy for me. So I don't have to spend 10 years trying to work out how to do something.
Right. They figured something out. Let's learn from them.
Yeah, let's give it to everybody in bite-sized pieces. And so when I was talking about the circle of wellness, that took me, you know, 3 or 4 years to work out. And it's the reason I sort of share it with people is because here is the tool. Work with this tool. This will make it easier. I think the inner work for me, when I talk about it, it's really looking at knowing your own system. So much of our time is spent trying to work out what everybody else is doing, what everybody else is thinking. If I do this, will they do something differently? And we're constantly outside ourselves and we're actually outside of our power. So we're trained to think that way, to manage everybody else's expectations and thoughts. But the inner work for me is literally coming back to self. And if I know my system, I know what happens for me when I'm really distressed. I know what happens for me when I'm really excited. I know what works for me when I have a vertigo flare. I know what works for me when I don't have a vertigo flare. When I know my system, that is the inner work for me because that's the foundation of choice. That's where I actually have choice about what
to do.
That's
powerful. Beautifully put. I love that.
Yeah. So for you then, you left corporate at one point and you took a move back into backing yourself and your own work. Often I think, you know, the internet's a beautiful thing and it can connect us, and it also can be very shiny. We have very shiny websites. And I just want to break that down for people. The shiny website and the photos you see in that, that is a whole thing. Like that is a photo shoot. That is artwork. That is web designers. It is a beautiful, easeful entry point for you to connect with us. But that shiny thing is not what it looks like when you say, okay, I'm going to go out and start a business. So I'm curious for you, what did it look like leading up to that decision? And then what did it look like once you'd made that decision?
So that's such a great question. And I think that the websites are so interesting as well. I never advise my clients to start there because one, I think it could be such a slippery slope and a rabbit hole. And also when my website has changed so many times over the years, because I think it evolves with me and the inner work as well. So it's like, there's always this next level of expression and our identity coming forward even more, and it keeps changing and evolving. So I think that the website as a metaphor is a really interesting one. But there was a call for me when I was in corporate America. I knew in the last role that I took that I didn't want to stay there. I knew that I wanted to do something bigger. I'd actually gone back to school to study nutrition at that point and was so lit up by that particular body of work because it had helped me so much in my own life and it helped me heal. And I decided that I wanted to teach a lot of these tools that I'd learned. So I wanted to create a corporate wellness company. And so I knew already going into my last role that this was going to be the last one. And you know, sometimes the universe kicks us out the nest when we really need to go. And it was one of those situations where it was a really hellacious experience. Like there were so many red flags in the interview. I should not have taken the role, but I wanted this shiny title for my resume. And I thought it was like the title that I needed to have for people to take me seriously before I went back into my own business. So I did it for a lot of the wrong quote unquote reasons. And so I ended up leaving fairly quickly after, but I already knew going in that I wasn't going to stay there. And so the decision was made for me. And then, you know, as soon as I stepped out of that, it was like, well, I've got to make this other business work. Let's go. And I just had that fire and passion and energy to do it. But what's interesting about the corporate wellness business is it was a stepping stone to my coaching business. So it was like every step kept clarifying the next step. I didn't know the big vision, but every step that I took or every move that I made clarified what was to come next. So I needed to take that role so that I would step out and create my corporate wellness business. And I needed to create the corporate wellness business so that I would create my coaching business. And so I had no idea what the big dream was going to be or where I was going to land, but I just kept going towards what feels warm. There's this beautiful quote in Vedic philosophy where they say, go towards what charms you. And it's something that I really try to live by because I think that what charms us is indication for where we're meant to spend our heartbeats. And so that's what I was just going towards what charmed me. But it was really hard. There was a lot of, you know, sweat and tears behind the scenes. It was not as linear as it sounds. There was a lot of times where I felt like from the outside, it probably looked really wild because I was making a lot of decisions that didn't look linear and my career wasn't looking like everybody else's. And so I was judging myself a lot for how things were unfolding. And it took a lot of mindset work and inner work, as we've been talking about, to give myself permission and to have confidence to take those moves and steps.
And I really appreciate you sharing the authenticity of that because I feel like, and this is, you know, an authentic moment between us, and I just want to flag this so that everybody listening and watching can see, Aminia and I don't know each other. Like this is our first big, beautiful conversation. And there's something that I'm intuitively feeling and I feel safe with her because she's already authentically sharing the truth and some of the vulnerability with me. I feel safe enough to say, hey, this is what I'm thinking and feeling. How's that landing for you? And so that's a bit of a build-up. But what I've been feeling in this in my own career process is I went into mentoring around chronic illness because for goodness sake, I wish I'd had it. And I went into it because I'd worked out a whole lot of tools. And part of my skills are I can teach you. I can teach you, break it down and teach you discernible steps. What I've found in this process is I am really, really passionate about the career and chronic illness space and helping you navigate it because I think it is one of the hardest spaces. The being in bed and not being able to walk or not being able to move, that's a really, really difficult space. Yes. I had that twice while navigating my career at work and having to sometimes work in that, sometimes not, but make my way back to the office. And it's about financial security. It's about health insurance. Career and chronic is something we don't talk about. It's not visible, but the data is in. We know that at least 38% of people working are living with a long-term health condition. And we know that it's something like 32% of people with chronic illness are in leadership and professional roles. And for those of you in this conversation with us, all of that data comes from the University of Melbourne, Dr. Peter Ginn's research. It's backed up by the Boston Consulting Group recent report. But all of that is something we're going to talk about when we chat with Peter as well. So what this says is that this is a big deal. And it looks invisible. And we're all sitting at our desk thinking, oh my God, how am I ever going to cope? I feel so alone. Nobody's having this conversation. Everybody's unwell. But it's the space in which the work is most needed. And I feel like, I mean, looking at your work, that there's this understanding, this trajectory of like helping people work is really important. And I'm wondering if you could share with us, yeah, where your thinking's come to in that as well.
I love how you teed this up, and I feel the same way. Like, I became a coach because coaching saved my life. And I believe so powerfully in these tools, and like, they've shifted my life, they shift my clients' lives. Like, for me, it does feel like life-saving work. And it feels like I wish everybody could have that experience of feeling, not everybody wants that experience, but I want people to feel like where they're spending their heartbeats every single day matters, that it's connected to their values, that they feel a sense of belonging, where they feel like they can be themselves, because most of us have to work and most of us spend most of our time at work. And so many of us spend so much time in spaces where we feel like we don't belong, we don't fit in, or we have to apologize for who we are. And if I could shift one thing, I would shift that thing. Because like I said, we spend more of our heartbeats there than anywhere else. It should feel really freaking amazing for people. And it doesn't feel amazing for so many of us. And I think what you're pointing to is so interesting too, right? One third of us is navigating chronic illness. One in three, if we look around any room. And so many of us are suffering silently or feel like we can't have those conversations in work, but it's so many of us. And I think that like you are doing in this summit, what people are doing by having these conversations is making a safe space and a brave space for us to talk more about this, because we absolutely need to, because there's so many of us.
Yeah.
We're not the minority anymore.
And I want to be also clean with everybody. These are conversations that I was having internally, but as I developed more strength and just put into practice authenticity. So I made the decision that in my environment, there was a lot of performance and a lot of fear. And that just comes with the territory a lot of the time. But I made the decision that I was going to work my authenticity. And there's no better place to work your authenticity, just like going to the gym, than to work it in an environment where you really have to build the muscle. So what that meant for me was I was going to tell the truth in a very discerning way. And I was going to invite people to share their truth with me. And I've got this most beautiful example that I want to share, because I'm really curious as well about your experience of this and authenticity. So I was all for, I'm going to share what's real and what's important to me. And I'm going to do it in a way that is respectful, but also honest. And I got known for that. I got known for the person that you could trust who would tell the truth to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really big deal. It also means that I had to get comfortable with other people sharing their truth with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because authenticity works both ways. It's not just, I'm going to tell all my truth and everybody has to just cope with it. It's like, it's a conversation both ways. And one of the examples I had of that was a colleague of mine got a promotion. And this is shadow work. I knew that that was super exciting, and I was very respectful of her having a promotion. And then what happened is somebody had guessed it, and I disclosed. And I knew the moment I had done it that I had disclosed. It was absolutely inappropriate. I was absolutely caught off guard, but I was also caught in the moment of wanting to be in relationship with the other person. So my beautiful colleague came up to me later and said, "Michelle, I know you told so-and-so about my promotion, and I want to tell you that it really upset me." And I looked at her and said, "I am so desperately sorry. You're 100% right. It was completely inappropriate. It's absolutely on me. And I really appreciate you coming and telling me, and that we can clear it. I'm happy to hear more. I'm happy to give you whatever respectful space you need, whatever it is you need." And she looked at me and said, "This is the first time I've ever, ever confronted somebody. And I really appreciate that I could trust you and I could come and tell you that this really hurt. And I feel really good about myself."
So powerful.
That's authenticity at work. Like, you can do this. It goes the other way. But I'm curious, what does it mean for you? Because you talk about authenticity as well, but it's not just a buzzword.
It's not. For me, authenticity is like the truth of who we are, because we're born into this world and we are perfectly whole. And then we get imprinted by our family systems, culture and subculture, and it shapes who we are, what we present to the world, how we show up, how we speak, our beliefs, everything. And for so many of the people that I work with, and this was true for me too, we arrive at a place in our careers and all of a sudden it feels so ill-fitting. Like, we checked the box, we got to a certain place, and then we look around and we realize this isn't the dream. This doesn't fit us, doesn't fit our bodies, it doesn't fit what we need. And then there's almost this existential crisis moment where it's like, well, if it's not this thing that I've been chasing my whole career, what is it? And I think that the invitation really is to ask us, what is our true nature? Who are we really? Who did we come to planet Earth as before we were imprinted by family, culture, media, et cetera? And for me, that's what it is, of like, what are the aspects of your true nature and how do we get on the court with those aspects? So if an aspect for you is radical truth-telling, it sounds like you're on the court with that at a 10. If an aspect for you is compassion, it sounds like you're on the court with that at a 10, right? So like, what are these aspects of you and how deeply are you on the court with them? Because when we first come to that conversation of authenticity, many of us might know the qualities, but we're not usually embodying them all the way. And so for me, authenticity is turning the volume all the way up on those aspects that are true for us. And I think, again, that's also a journey of a lifetime. Some people get there real quick, and some of us, it takes, you know, the entirety of our lives. And it's a beautiful journey because we're learning every step of the way. So that's how I think about authenticity.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. And I love this, the way in which you're framing it, because I think of it as, what's your essence? It's it's the same thing, and it's going to get expressed in different ways and in different spaces. And what I can see, and I'm testing this with you, it's like, you clearly have been hungry to understand how to live well with work, with yourself, and in your life, and how to have that in an integrated way. Does that feel true for you over a time?
Yeah, absolutely. There has been a desire. All I want is to be myself. That's all I've ever wanted, right? I think about why I teach what I teach. It's because all I ever wanted was to be myself and to be paid for that thing and to live well and whole. And I think so many people also want that thing.
Yes.
And there's so many barriers to that in our world because we're so conditioned, or we're told that life has to look a certain way or work has to look a certain way. And so my work really is a journey of unbecoming, of peeling back all the layers and all the program we've put on to come back to that essence that we're both talking about and asking ourselves, what do we really want? It's a big question.
It is. And I think we start to do that by listening into the very quiet parts of us that shrink. Usually we can find what we want by the parts of us that, as soon as you even say, well, I'd really like to do this, and once it's out of your mouth, you almost want to take it back. that discomfort, that sort of part of it coming to into fruition is usually because there's a whole lot of things layered on top about why you can't have what you want. But if it makes you uncomfortable to think about, you know, what might be possible or what's in your heart, go towards the discomfort. It's not like you work out what's in your heart and then it's like, oh, great, I've worked it out. This is the way to go. This is the easeful process, because it will become easeful, but it's uncomfortable if we've learned to shut down what's important to us.
I love that. I actually once hired a coach because we were in a group together and I was deeply triggered by them. And I was like, I'm so triggered by you. There's got to be something really big in here for me to learn. And I was like, please be my coach. And it ended up being such a great experience. To your point, go towards the discomfort or the parts that we've made small or shrunk or hidden away.
Yeah. And it's not go towards the parts that feel abusive or whatever. It's go towards the parts that feel they want more.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a great distinction.
Yeah. I am really curious then, as we come towards a close in our conversation, what would be for somebody living with chronic illness who are looking to try and work out their career, who are either in a role at the moment that doesn't feel great but does have great insurance, or they're trying to just feel out what the next thing is for them in their own confidence. Could you share with us what you would, in a casual conversation, what would you say the top three things are to developing your own confidence in this process?
Yeah, I would say that there are seasons in our lives around our careers. So I think that there are seasons where we need the good enough job, and that's good enough, right? Like, I think that first job that I took back in corporate America was my good enough job because I needed to find my bearings and I needed the good insurance. And that wasn't a season where I was like, let me think about my purpose. That was a season of the good enough job. And so I would say, like, really ebb and flow with the seasons. And if you're in a good enough job and that's checking the box for you right now, allow yourself to be there. I think sometimes we impose ambition on ourselves. And I think ambition goes through seasons as well. So if you're in a good enough space and that feels great for now, allow yourself to be there. And if you feel called to something bigger, I love doing work around purpose. I actually have this beautiful workbook that I'm happy to offer to members of the summit, that it's a 5-part framework around purpose that invites us into a conversation of looking at our gifts, what we value, what brings us joy, how we can meet our needs, and what we want to impact. And I think that our purpose lives at the center of those 5 areas. And so if you feel like you're in a season where you want to peel back the layers on that, then I invite you to do work like that. And then also, I think for those of us navigating chronic illness, the needs piece is so important. We need to have our needs met above everything else, right? So what is it that you need to thrive? What do you need to be able to show up and shine? And really allowing yourself to prioritize that. For me, in my journey, in my history, I have historically felt very apologetic around my needs. And it was a real big journey. And I did a lot of work to be able to prioritize them and to state them and to set boundaries around them. And so, but I need to have my needs met in order for me to show up and do the work that I'm called to do. And it took me a long time to realize that self-sacrifice is not a contribution. And if I take myself out because I am not well, the contribution that I'm here to make fails to exist. And so, you know, I think that's just, I would love to offer that same ethos to all of you, because it's the same thing. And so really prioritizing ourselves. And I think that is deeply connected to confidence, because we need the confidence and the audacity to allow ourselves to prioritize ourselves and our needs. And we live in a world that has told us that we don't get to have that audacity, but we do get to have that audacity. And so practice that confidence, that permission giving in your communities, because that's the safest place for us to try it on.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because often when we think of our needs, we almost go into the world, it's like, these are my needs. And we're like full barrage in. If we've suppressed them or shrunk them for a long period of time, we almost overextend to balance
the over-rotation.
Out.
Yes.
And so having somewhere that you can practice this or have a conversation about it and really get some skills in it, I think is a beautiful, perfect way to start. And if that's at work, what I want to offer is, if you see somebody who just, you think, nails it in their confidence or in their ways in which they articulate what's important, and they hold it in an almost neutral way. First thing you can do is watch them. Watch it and watch how they speak about themselves and what they share. The second thing you can do, and you can feel out if it feels true, and we absolutely respect everybody else's sovereignty. Nobody has to be your coach or your mentor at work. That's something that you can find outside of it. But if there is somebody who you think really has this nailed, you can actually go up and say, hey, look, I'm wondering, I'm going to try and have a conversation about this with my boss. I'm not asking you to get involved. I'm not asking you in any way to participate in that conversation. But I'd like to test out with you the way in which I'm going to approach it. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to listen to that and just offer any strategy that you may have about how I am going to have this conversation the way I've worked it out. Mm-hmm. And that can take some confidence, but it's whether it's them, a different mentor, what you're doing is you're testing your own process because it's you that has to do it. And so you want, whether it's in community or elsewhere, you want somewhere you can test it. Yeah. All of that leads me to your confidence. Mm-hmm. You now have a book that's coming out, and I'm wondering if you might want to share with us all the exciting things, how people can connect with you, and what it is that's in your heart at the moment, that's your next big thing that you're also breathing through the confidence in.
Oh, thank you so much for asking. So you can learn more about me on Instagram and my website. So it's at Amina Altai and aminaaltai.com. And I'm sure the spelling will be here for you. So don't worry about that. So a couple of things that I have coming down the pike. So yes, I am working on my book. My manuscript is due in just a few weeks, but the book won't be out in the world until 2025. So we've got some time on that. But if you are curious to learn more about my work, you can sign up for my newsletter. I give away so much content, like lots of worksheets, meditations, things like that in there. And then that workbook as well. If you're curious, I'll make sure that you get a link so everyone can have that. And then I'm launching an accelerator in August for entrepreneurs that want to work differently, that are kind of tired of the tried and true tactics out there that people with dominant identities are teaching that haven't worked for people with non-dominant identities. So really thinking about how do we do entrepreneurship in a different way, in a way that's more supportive of our minds, bodies, and souls. But yeah, thank you so much for asking me. And thank you for having me here today. It's been such a joy and a pleasure to talk to you. I love the way that you think about this, and the work that you're doing in the world is so meaningful. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I so appreciate it. And I love that you are doing entrepreneurship and you're doing it from this deeply authentic way, and that you're standing in that in the world. And we are on collaborative paths. I'm about with this summit, and those of you listening to the podcast, I run a 3-month professional development program for people living with chronic illness while navigating their career. And that launches the first round in the 1st of October. And so as you're listening to this in the summit, whether it's entrepreneurship or navigating your career, we've got two places that you can dive in, and both of us will be posting lots of resources and content around that. So thank you so much, Amina. I think it's been a beautiful conversation. Thank you for trusting me. Thank you for sharing your vulnerability with us. And thank you for following your own authentic heart.
Thank you again for reaching out, for having me to be a part of this. And thank you all so much for tuning in.
Thank you so very much for joining me for this very special season around career and chronic illness. If you are trying to navigate your career while managing chronic conditions, we have some very exciting news for you. We have a whole new website, careerandchronicillness.com, which has lots of free resources where you can access some of our career and chronic roadmap, as well as details of our group programs, our specialized training, including how to have this funded through your organization as professional development. And you can also work with me privately. So pop over careerandchronicillness.com, and I look forward to sharing with you next week